The Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5, the game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by the Athletics media reporter, Richard Deitch. Richard, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm good, although I have to be honest with you guys. I may never listen to a sports podcast again. I may never watch the NFL again because I just can't get over the fact that Taylor Swift is appearing on New Heights. I'm gonna boycott everything. In another line of people claiming to boycott X and then never following through. Otherwise, I am excellent, gentlemen. Good to be with you guys.
That's good to know. So, Richard, a lot happening in the world of sports media, which is why we wanted to have you on the program. So let's start with the ESPN NFL deal. When a major trade goes down in any sport, we rush to label winners and losers. So let's do that exercise for this mega deal between ESPN and the NFL. Who are the biggest winners and losers of this deal? And it does not have to be limited to ESPN and the NFL.
No, look at that. You want me to do trade grades, man. All right, let's put my thinking cap on. Well, certainly the NFL is a major winner. And that's really not surprising because when it comes to financial deals, the NFL almost always wins. They win because they have the leverage when it comes to the most important thing, and that's their content. And in particular, if you want to be specific, game inventory. That's the most valuable content, I would say, right now in the United States. And that's why the NFL can dictate so many terms that they have. So in exchange for what they gave to ESPN, you know, NFL Network, rights to Red Zone Digital, this sort of incorporation between the two bodies, you know, they get 10% stake of ESPN. You know, if you do the valuation on that, I mean, that's massive. I don't know if ESPN's ever going to be sold or spun off, but like, you know, the whatever that dollar figure is, it's only going to go up. And so the biggest winner is the NFL. I think ESPN is a winner as well, and here's why. The relationship that you have to have if you're an ESPN or a Peacock or a Paramount Plus or Netflix, you have to have a relationship with the NFL and a significant one, or your business is cooked as we head forward. The NFL is the driver that people ultimately pay for when it comes to parting with their money for stuff. And this deal really, I mean, the NFL and ESPN, obviously, they're longstanding partners. They have a deal, but this really solidifies them as financial partners. And so if nothing else, does it guarantee like past 2029 they'll be part of the NFL media ecosystem? No, but I'd have to think it maybe gives them a leg up on Fox and NBC and CBS Skydance Paramount. So if you're ESPN, this really, I think, sets your business up into the next decade. You have a significant relationship with your most important content vendor. And you now have, you know, the most important sport in the country when it comes to your direct-to-consumer business, which is what ESPN is now going to launch on August 21st. It's a little under $30. It's really appealing to people who've never had cable, a lot of young people who, you know, just want the sports that are on ESPN. And the NFL now is a central figure within that proposition. So I would say ESPN is a winner. I would say the NFL is a winner. I don't know if fans are losers per se, because I think if you're a diehard NFL fan, you probably have access to the NFL already. So maybe they're net neutral, a little net positive. And then lastly, and quite frankly, I don't think many people even care as much about this anymore. I would say investigative journalism at ESPN probably long-term is a loser. It's not to say they won't do stuff, because they have some great reporters there, including Dan Van Natta Jr., but when you make a relationship like this, I do wonder, you know, how many resources you're going to really throw to something like concussions or something like that, or things that the NFL really, really does not want examined in the public sphere. We're not talking about like trades. The NFL doesn't care about that. The NFL doesn't care about if a head coach gets fired. That's all you guys know. That's daily radio fodder. It's the stuff that really can hurt the business long term that they care about. So if I had to say a loser in this long term, it's probably hardcore investigative journalism at ESPN regarding the stuff the NFL really doesn't want you to know.
Richard, how do you anticipate the NFL will address the fact that that it will be in position to directly profit off sports gambling because of its relationship with ESPN, which licenses its name to a sports book.
The NFL and hypocrisy, my man.
Not at all.
You're so quaint. I enjoy it. I don't think the NFL cares one bit. The NFL's in the business of gambling. I mean, I always thought you know how Al Michaels like historically would do like the cheeky stuff at the end of games. You know, somebody's really happy about this. Folks in the desert are really busy. It is so silly that the NFL will not just be open with this relationship when it comes to sports gambling and themselves. The fact that they don't they don't actually push the networks to have like spreads during game broadcast is absurdly silly to me. Like, they're in the business of this. They have big sponsorships with, as you mentioned, gambling houses already. It's like, it really truly is like a living example of the famous Casablanca scene when, you know, and Sidney Greenstreet gets his winnings from Humphrey Bogart. I mean, it's just silly. It's just not above board. And so I don't think they care. I think we have seen this with basketball, and we'll see what happens with baseball for sure with some of this stuff. I think where the NFL really cares is they care about a player gambling scandal, you know, or a coach gambling scandal. That's when they really care, because, you know, when you examine all these leagues and talk to people who are executives in the league, the one thing that could really, really hurt the league is if the public doesn't believe stuff's on the up and up, right? If they don't believe that player X is trying their hardest, player Y is trying their hardest, or, like, let's say somebody in coaching is manipulating the system. So I think when it comes to sports gambling, that's the kind of scandal that they really care about most. I don't think they care about optics or anything like that. And I just want to say this, just in terms of my own personal opinion. You know, I'm not a morality player here on this. Like, I actually think the fact that this stuff is legal probably gives all these leagues a better opportunity to catch bad actors, because the official books will alert them when there's a really, like, suspect bet, you know, especially like a suspect prop bet. And so, you know, it was a long-winded way to answer your question. Like, honestly, I don't think the NFL cares. I mean, the NFL is involved in all this stuff. They like to pretend that, you know, they're a little above board, but they're not. They're looking to create as much capital and as much finances as they can, and the gambling industry is a gigantic white whale for them.
Now, Richard, has the NFL sort of found themselves in this sort of rarefied air? Because we talk about some companies in the world where you're just too big to fail. We can't let you fail. And we know who those companies are, whether it's banks or, you know, automotive companies. Has the NFL gotten to that point where they are too big to fail?
First of all, I hope they one of those companies in the United States of America, because I got a bleep load of money in the market. So let's make sure like that we don't have defaults. Mm-hmm. Let's do the right thing there. Yeah, I would say the NFL is too big to fail. I used to, like, when I was far more active on Twitter, I used to find it hilarious. Like, people would come on and say, like, look at this study that, like, you know, in this town, like, there's less kids playing high school football. Kids aren't going to play football. Like, there's always been alarmists when it comes to the NFL, and, like, somehow, like, people are going to turn away from it. What on earth have you seen in terms of American culture where people are not obsessive about the National Football League? You can make an argument. It's one of the few things left in American life that's actually communal, where you can get people of different races, different political persuasions, different genders, et cetera, like, who rally around, like, something, whether it's watching their favorite team or watching the sport itself. They're whatever the, you know, the revenue is at this point, you know, 25 million, well, I 25 billion, whatever the number is, I should know it, but I don't. Like, it is inconceivable that business somehow could start to decline, because in an era of declining cable subscriptions and viewers, in an era of declining linear television viewers, the NFL has held up on all of this. Like, the numbers continue to remain strong. So they've beaten market forces. The game is as popular as ever. The athletes are better than we've ever seen before. The game is a perfect television game because the inventory is limited, 17 weeks, right, regular season. It's scarcity. It's a perfect sport to gamble. It's a perfect sport to play fantasy football because you can manage this stuff because it's once a week as opposed to, let's say, baseball where you got to manage it every day. So, no. I mean, honestly, if I was, like, betting on the companies or sectors in the United States that have the best possible future, like 20 years from now. Like, I would have the NFL probably up there with like things like AI. I don't see anything maybe short of like massive scandal, and this isn't going to happen, where like 100 players in the NFL are like throwing games or something like that. I don't see anything that's going to reduce the American obsession for the sport. So I think you have a really good phrase there. I actually think they are too big to fail, certainly in 2025.
Now, with that being said, do you think, because the show before ours, Big Joe and Chase, Chase brought up yesterday, I believe, that he believes one day, because of what's happening with the streaming and all these mergers, that we will be paying for a Super Bowl. Do you think there will be a day where we have to pay single for a Super Bowl to watch it?
Well, I haven't been on with Chase in a long time, but I love the fact that he's still being, he's like Blade Runner, looking at post apocalyptic future. Yeah. Hold on. Mm-hmm. You have to tell me the time frame, mm-hmm. okay? Like, I don't think this is going to happen in the next 20 years, okay? Mm-hmm. 25 years, no. But if you ask me, like, let's do 2025, okay? If you ask me in 2075, like, would the NFL be on some kind of streamer or some kind of product where you have to subscribe to watch, I would say yes. So to me, it's more about just your time frame. Mm-hmm. Some of this is, you know, it's very hard to answer the question perfectly because, you know, you'd have to know what the state of the government is, because I do think congressional, like I think whatever Congress is at that point, like I do think government would come in and really make it hard for the National Football League to do this, because I think their constituents would be like, you got to keep this on whatever, quote unquote, over the air airwaves. But I just think everything is heading in that direction. This would be the last thing to go. So if you're talking about a 50-year time frame, this is just a guess of mine. You know, obviously, mm-hmm. people who aren't even born yet, you know, like we're talking about, I just think they're going to be born into a world where you're used to, like, paying for a streaming product. Mm-hmm. So 2075, my answer would be yes. 2050, I still think my answer is no.
And that's why I asked before I pass it to Willie, because we have to, like, certain games, if you want to watch during the year, say if I don't have Peacock, I got to buy Peacock to watch that game. So the Correct. NFL knows what they're doing. So eventually, maybe, it may be like what you said, it may not be for another 50 years. But I'm not sure if they could dangle that out there long enough to have it where people are not paying for it. Because even if they tack $2 charge to it, I think people are going to buy it.
By the way, keep in mind, you're using the example of the Super Bowl. If you ask me that question about the conference championship, uh-huh. I'm going the under on 25.
Oh,
games.
Okay.
So this is, it's just the one, that is the one game, because that is the singular biggest cultural event in the United States where my time frame would be longer. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me NFL conference championships, World Series, NBA finals, I would say all of them be on a streaming product or some version of a streaming product. The Super Bowl will be, at least in my opinion, the last one to go. I think the public is going to get to a point where streaming, where again, we just think of Netflix or we think of Peacock or we think of Amazon Prime in the same way we thought of back in the day, ABC, CBS, NBC. I think it's just going to be part of your discretionary, you know, budget in the same way, like you pay for, like Wi-Fi. I think that's the direction we're heading. And then obviously all this stuff is going to be about pricing. You know, what a lot of our conversation here about today is all these places have to figure out what the right price is, because they're all afraid of churn. They don't want you to like sign up for a month and then leave. This is why things like, you know, UFC is no longer going with a pay-per-view model with Skydance Paramount Plus, because there's like the thought process is if you love this product, you're willing to stay with us for 12 months for a reduced cost than it would normally cost you to pay for the pay-per-view version.
We're talking to Richard Deitch. He covers sports media for The Athletic. Richard, you came out with Tom Brady's first three and probable fourth game for Fox. And I'm curious, you did a lot of reporting last year on his training process to get ready to be thrown right into the top team on Fox. And I think we would all agree he was not a natural. He got better as the season went along. And I'm curious if you had any insights on what he's done to try to get better for this year.
Yeah, you're like, it's like Pacino. I thought I was done with Brady. I thought it was out. Now you're bringing me back in. Unbelievable. All right. I guess I got to talk about the highest paid sports broadcaster in the United States. Well, I expect him to be better. And this is, I mean, the three of you know this. You're better right now, right, than you were a year ago just because of all the reps you've had in the last year. I mean, you know, Willie knows this obviously from doing games. It's the same exact thing. So Brady will just be better just because, like, things like a producer in his ear during a game talking, like, that he's now going to be used to that. You know, a better cadence for how long you have between plays to discuss things. He's going to be better on that. He just knows the rhythms of the job better. So there's no way he's not going to be better just because of the mechanics of it. The interesting thing with Brady, and again, I don't know if there's a solution to this, the fact that he's an owner or has ownership stake in Las Vegas, I think is always going to hold him back a little bit because he ultimately like works for a team. He's part of the league. And I don't know how far he could really go in his analysis because of like that inherent conflict. There's a little bit of lack of freedom that he has. So I think he always will have a ceiling. I think he could be good. And I think by the end of the year, he was getting close to whatever like good is, you know, like B minus B. To me right now, Troy Aikman is the best analyst on who's doing NFL games right now. And I find him to be the best. One, he's got great chemistry with Joe Buck, but I find him to be the best because there's a freedom in his analysis. He doesn't care about how the league feels about something or how even viewers sometimes feel about something. He's sort of speaking his truth to what he sees in front of him. And I don't know if Brady could ever get to that ceiling, but I do think Brady could get to the level of like a solid B. And if you're a solid B, in some ways the games take care of themselves because he and Kevin Burkhart will always call an A game for the most part. It might not turn out to be an A game because it's a blowout or something like that, but every week he is going to call games that people care about, at least at kickoff. So as long as he's sitting there at like, you know, like a above average analyst, I think, one, I know Fox will be happy with that. And two, I think in some ways the public will be fine with it. He wasn't an absolute disaster. And in some ways, when I was thinking about him last year, I think that was really the biggest bar he had to clear. He just couldn't be deer in headlights, you know, like really.
Sidney,
you know,
Brady, like, on the Brady's Bunch, or Brady,
yeah,
Bunch, right?
Yeah, if you go back really, really old school, like Joe Montana, Emmitt Smith.
Yeah, he was bad.
It just didn't work. And for Brady, he was comfortable enough where, if nothing else, it worked, where he's not going to freeze up. And in that sense, he cleared the bar. So I expect him to be better, but honestly, I don't ever expect us to talk about him in the same way we might talk about, wow, like, you know, Greg Olson's revolutionary, or Troy Aikman is just, like, so good at this. Like, I don't see Brady ever hitting that. I'd love him to prove me wrong, though. I think it'd be awesome if he did.
Richard, before we let you go, I am a combat sports fan, so I do want to ask you about the UFC deal. In comes WWE onto ESPN. Out goes UFC. A two-part question for you, Richard. One, how much more mainstream will UFC become as a result of the move to Paramount, especially now that fans will not have to fork over, what, $80 for the numbered pay-per-view events? And how do you think ESPN will cover UFC after this move? Because I'm thinking of when the NHL left ESPN for NBC 20-ish years ago. If I recall correctly, ESPN effectively stopped covering hockey. So do you see something similar playing out here with UFC and ESPN?
Mario Lemieux, who? That was ESPN back in the day. It's a good question. Yeah, I mean, generally, as a cynic, I always tend to sort of play on the side of, once you're not a part of the ESPN ecosystem financially, ESPN does forget about you. Now, that doesn't mean total absence of coverage, but, you know, maybe they have one reporter for ESPN.com, covers the major fights. You know, if it's a massive, massive one, maybe SportsCenter throws somebody on, or that person goes on First Take for blah, 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 whatever. But yeah, I would see a reduction of it. I mean, I history tells you that's the case. You saw it with hockey. You've seen it with baseball. So that would be my instinct on ESPN. You know, in terms of like the it's a really good question, actually. Do I think UFC becomes more mainstream because it'll have some airings on CBS and it's not on pay-per-view? Probably. Yeah, I think it will grow a little bit. It's not going to be the NBA, college football, NFL, you know, it's not going to reach that, you know, MLB. It's not going to reach that level. But yeah, I think you might have more casual fans check it out now because the access is better. But here would be my only counter to even what I just said now. I don't watch a ton of UFC, but I certainly watch a lot of WWE and AEW in my life. And if you're into that stuff, you're already paying for it, right? Like you have already made the investment to do that. So I don't know like how many new fans like are going to go to CBS because like they refuse to pay the dollar figures prior for the pay-per-views. I think if you're like in the UFC or you're into combat sports, like you're already there. You've already paid that. But I do think, yeah, I mean, I do think there will be some casuals who check out some stuff, especially if there's a lot of publicity in the same way. Like, you know, NBC gets a great viewership number for the Kentucky Derby every year. And the reason they get that isn't for the horse racing diehards. It's because they get like 9 or 10 million people who kind of just want to check out like 2 hours of the race and see people with hats and see people walking around like, you know, beautiful Kentucky and stuff like that. And I think UFC will benefit a little bit from that. And then the last one, and this is a real caveat, you know, some of it'll be interesting to see what happens with the White House and, you know, how much Trump in particular, who seems to be very tight with Dana White, like how much he or the White House promotes it officially. And there's going to be a fight there, at least that, you know, that's from everything so far. So that would change the calculus. Like, if nothing else, the President of the United States has a massive publicity arm. And if the President of the United States is talking about, like, a specific fight or talking about a specific pro league, that will add people watching it just based on the fact that it's coming from the most important office in the United States.
Richard Deitch, the Athletic's media reporter, has been our guest on D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick. Richard, great stuff as always. We'll catch up soon.
All right. I'm off to Taylor Swift.
All right. Enjoy. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Mike Sando's quarterback tiers on The Athletic do not reflect well on the AFC South. Is there an opening for Cam Ward and the Titans to take advantage? We'll discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. This September, Tim McGraw will be performing at Trinetics' Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. Also, be listening before 5 o'clock. I will give you a cue to call to win a pair of tickets to see Rod Stewart this Thursday night at Ascend Amphitheater. So if you want those tickets to see Rod Stewart on Thursday, tomorrow, be listening for the next 30 minutes and longer, but especially for those tickets for the next 30 minutes. So one of the lists that I look forward to reading every NFL season is Mike Sando's NFL quarterback tiers at The Athletic. And he released his most recent version on Monday. Now, before you ask, Cam Ward is not on this list because rookies are ineligible. So Cam Ward is not listed in Mike Sando's quarterback tier. So before you ask, there's your answer. But I thought it would be interesting to look at where the other quarterbacks in the AFC South rank on this list and ask the question, is there an opening for Cam Ward and the Titans to take advantage? So let's start with the highest-ranked quarterback in the AFC South. In Tier 2, tied for 9th, C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud received 39 Tier 2 votes, just one Tier 1 vote last season, coming off of his Offensive Rookie of the Year season. He had 12 Tier 1 votes. So from 12 down to 1. One defensive coordinator says, quote, everybody wants to downgrade CJ. His number one receiver was out. The line did not play great. The run game wasn't there like it should have been. Another voter saw Stroud as a low tier two. I read an article. They said it's time for him to take the next step. What is the next step? It's time for his team to take the next step. He's pretty damn productive. So let's start with CJ Stroud. C.J. Stroud, at the moment, clearly the best quarterback in the AFC South. Derek, do you see C.J. Stroud bouncing back from what many called a down season last season, or do you think he settles into that low tier two that one voter had him at in this ranking?
Well, yeah, I think last year they suffered because they had injuries across the board, especially at the wide receiver position. I think Tank Dell was down for a portion. Stephon Diggs was gone for the whole season. Well, he played, what, two or three games, and after that he was done for the season. So when you go into the season banking on these guys to be there for at least all, if not 80 to 90% of the games, and that doesn't happen, it will change the sort of the outlook of your offense. There, unless somebody else steps up and fills that void. But typically, when, because at the time, Stephon Diggs was, I believe he was their number one receiver as far as yardage. Now, Nico is their number one receiver, but Stephon was really building a connection with C.J. Stroud. Then he goes down. Tank Dell goes down. They have offensive line problems. That right there is going to cause a quarterback, no matter who you are, to take a step back. He still led his team to the playoffs. He still had a good season, not better than it was the previous year's rookie year, but he still had a good season. And I still, they believe in what C.J. Stroud is doing. But again, there's a question mark because now they don't have Stephon Diggs. I know they drafted another kid to fill that space, but now C.J. Stroud got to get used to that guy.
He also has probably the worst offensive line in the NFL protecting.
Exactly. So this will, starting with C.J. Stroud, if this was C.J. Stroud in his first year and we saw what he did, I would say, man, that window's not open for anybody to sort of jump over him. But because of what happened last year and not knowing, you know, how it's going to look this year, especially with their offensive line, then, yeah, there is a question mark. That's why I said the Titans – you know, are they a good team? I think man-to-man, you know, no. The depth is not there. The talent, they don't have as much. But because of the other teams in their division still have question marks, and question marks at the quarterback position, they have a chance.
C.J. Stroud last year was sacked 52 times, and he was eighth in percentage of times sacked. So he does hold the ball, and this goes back to a discussion we had last week, which is, are sacks a quarterback stat or an offensive line stat? And Sean Payton came out publicly recently and said, sacks are a quarterback stat. So that's one that I'm curious about, because he is in that classic situation where the line gets blamed for a lot of stuff. I wonder if he can get to a next level with that, because despite he's solidly in tier two, and maybe that's his floor, and that's still a win for the Texans. If that's the worst he ever plays, is how he played last year, he's going to be fine. But he did grade a lot lower. His voting went way down. He had 12 votes for a tier one quarterback after 1 year, only had one last year. So how does he bounce back? How does he get better? How does the team around him get better? But he certainly looks like the real deal for a guy that's pretty young.
Quickly, in Tier 3, next up in the AFC South, at number 18, Trevor Lawrence of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence is now on his, if I'm not mistaken, fourth coach since entering the NFL. The Jaguars hope that Liam Cohen can unlock Trevor Lawrence. Of course, he has Brian Thomas Jr. He's going to have Travis Hunter playing snaps on the offensive side of the ball. But here was a quote from a defensive coach who faced Lawrence multiple times, including in 2024. I thought this was an interesting quote. He has missed a bunch of schemed up shots downfield. There is nothing that scares you about this kid. How is he beating you unless he happens to hit on some of those deep ones? I don't know how much of that is scheme versus what he does and cannot do. There is nothing elite about him from a big picture standpoint.
It's an overwhelmingly high majority that had him as a tier three. Like, he's no longer living off being a guy that's got potential.
39 of 50 votes in tier three.
Yes. And so that says a lot, right? And the first quote is, I thought he would be better. And I think that would encompass what most of us said. When he was the first pick in the draft, I think if you ask people that night, hey, I'm going to tell you in 5 years, he's going to be an overwhelming, everybody's going to have him in tier three. Somebody would have said, I'll eat my hat, right? We just could not have envisioned him struggling this much. But there's only so much you can say about the coaching changes and the injuries. It does look like he looked like the can't miss that has not been a can't miss.
One former GM said he hasn't proved that he can take the team up a level or make the team play better than they are. I definitely think Liam Cohen can help him if he is able to be helped. Now, Derek, hold that thought. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to break. 615-737-1025. Mike Sando's quarterback tiers do not reflect well on the AFC South. Is there an opening for Cam Ward and the Titans to take advantage? We've mentioned C.J. Stroud. We've mentioned Trevor Lawrence. There are two other quarterbacks, specifically one in the AFC South.
The most interesting one.
The most interesting
one. We have not
one.
Discussed yet.
We will do that next. 615-737-1025. Okay, I mentioned Rod Stewart tickets. Here are those Rod Stewart tickets. Be caller number three at 615-737-1025. And you will win a pair of tickets to see Rod Stewart tomorrow night at Ascend Amphitheater. Caller number three for Rod Stewart tickets tomorrow at Ascend. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Ving at 102.5 The Game.
Forever young, D. Mace and I, even though we're older than Adam.
But you're not as old.
We're young at heart.
You're not as old as Rod Stewart.
Definitely not.
I guessed low on him. I guessed 76 the other day. He's 80.
Hey, he's pushing.
Still rocking it.
By the way,
a lot of people wanting those tickets. When you said caller number two, those phone lines went boom.
You think I'm sexy?
By the way, congratulations to Chad for winning those tickets. So enjoy Rod Stewart tomorrow, Chad. Let's continue our conversation on Mike Sando's quarterback tiers, AFC South edition. So C.J. Stroud, the top quarterback in the division, tied for ninth. Trevor Lawrence, 18th. You have to scroll all the way down to number 32 to find Anthony Richardson. By the way, at 30, Daniel Jones. So Anthony Richardson behind Daniel Jones. And man, oh man, do the voters dislike Anthony Richardson. Here is just a sampling.
It's quite harsh.
An executive, an anonymous executive. Quote, I think it is a pipe dream right now, based on what I have seen, to say he is a starter in the NFL. The accuracy is not there. If you want to do college football RPO type stuff, that is your guy. But some of the stuff last year was not starter quality. One defensive coach, quote, they are not ready to say that they effed up, but they are hedging. One voter, another voter, the Anthony Richardson experiment is over.
So he was an experiment as the fourth pick in the draft.
Correct.
He was.
And it's over. There's no chance, he's saying. It's over. That is harsh.
Another defensive coordinator said he's a freaky athlete for his size, but he's been hurt every year because of it. Unless he is rearing back and throwing the ball as far as he can and somebody runs underneath it, he's not accurate and can't make any of those throws. Tell me how you really feel, anonymous NFL people.
But that's why you have to do
anonymous.
That.
Anonymous.
Is so that they will give you the unfiltered stuff.
Correct.
As you know. But I think this is fascinating because we keep making this point. He is essentially the exact same age as Cam Ward. This is his third year. Trevor Maddich gave us some good insight on this. He gave a very detailed answer when he was on our show yesterday, but he said, D-Mace, that Anthony Richardson probably made a very big mistake of not staying in college and learning some of it because it's the only way you can develop. And it does look like with Bo Nix, hopefully with Cam Ward and some other quarterbacks, that the more games you play on the college level, the more reps you get, especially if you're in an offense that is a building block on some level for what you have facing you as a pro, that you can't develop at the NFL level. And it looks like Anthony Richardson is going to be a big tale of woe unless he dramatically turns it around.
Yeah, he did the right. I'm going to disagree with that. I think he did the right thing by coming out.
Really?
Because his stock was as high as it was going to get. He was ultimately, I think, was going to be probably if he'd have stayed in between Joe Milton and Will Levis as far as talent. I think that's where he would have been either on the bottom end or the top end.
So it was good that he was overrated?
It was good, again.
From a money standpoint.
Yeah, from a money standpoint, it was good.
Because he's getting paid the money, I guess.
I don't think he would, if he would have stayed in Florida, they wouldn't have developed him no more than what he is now. I don't think they would have. One, because had he shown that next season, had he stayed and had gotten any better, what you call his butt was on the line, the head coach. He would have made that change to go to another quarterback. To try to get something going, because his job was on the line. And again, I've said this, and I will continue to say it until somebody proves me different. College coaches are not here to develop you for the NFL. If you get there, great. As a quarterback, if you get there, great. But they are not in the business to develop you. They're in the business of winning. That's why you see some of these offenses the way that they are.
But the alternative is to sit in the – well, either be thrown into the fire mm-hmm. – unsuccessfully, as has been the case in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. or sit and watch, not take the starters reps. And right now the Colts are facing a situation where Shane Steichen's in his third year. He's supposed to be winning by now. He is attached to Anthony Richardson, or the alternative is to play a quarterback that most people think the jury has already made their decision. Daniel Jones is not a great quarterback, right?
And we'll get to him in a moment.
But he might be the best chance of winning now. So can you imagine being 23, the same age as Cam Ward, who has got this bright future? Hey, he's just starting. But be written off at the same age where Cam Ward is just starting. That is fascinating to me.
I'm telling you what's going to happen. They're going to end up, I truly believe they're going to end up playing Richardson just to lose. Just to lose. They're going to play Richardson just to lose. Because Indianapolis, like a few other teams, they've had this fortune of going from one quarterback, one good quarterback to another. They did it from Peyton to...
Maybe they would do some bad luck.
Exactly. They went to
no
luck.
No pun intended.
And then they was trying. I mean, hell, they went out and got Richardson with the fourth pick in the draft. It ain't work after 2 years going on three. They're going to put themselves in a position again to be able to get the first pick in the draft. And they're hoping and praying what? Manning comes out. That's what they're hoping. They're hoping and praying and Archie Manning comes out.
But didn't Archie, the grandfather, didn't he already say that Arch will stay?
Hey,
he's going
right
to stay.
Now, yeah, he's saying it now.
Which is what Peyton did. Peyton stayed.
Hold on. Just think, if at the end of the season, say if, you know, Manning has a good season, not a great season, but he has a good season. Texas, they go to the, you know, they're in the playoffs. They may win a game in the playoffs.
Okay.
They get
a,
you know,
solid
eliminated.
Year.
A really solid year. And Indianapolis has the first pick in the draft. You don't think that man is not thinking about coming out? It would be.
So he's going to wait and see who has the first pick and then decide?
It would be almost like it's a story that needs to be on Hallmark. It's a Hallmark story. Yes, I'm bringing it back.
I would argue that New Orleans.
I'm bringing it back.
I would argue that New Orleans would be
the more of the fairy tale. You're saying
more of a Hallmark story.
No, but what I'm saying is
just
that.
Just saying.
What I'm saying is that. Listen.
No offense, Spencer Rattler.
Richardson, he made the right business decision from a money standpoint, because I can remember another quarterback, Matt Leinart. Had Matt Leinart come out the year before, he might have been the number one pick in the draft. But Matt Leinart said, no, I'm going to stay another year. And he ended up having not a good year. And he ended up falling. He shouldn't even have been that first-round pick, honestly, the way he played that prior year. And it showed. Once he got in the NFL, he was trash.
And maybe that's the answer with Richardson, is that maybe he's just not cut out to be an NFL quarterback. And he would not be alone in the long
but
list.
But he got paid for it.
He will have the money, right, even if he doesn't ever make it. But I am curious, too, at such a young age, if he is thrown to the curb and then has to sort of work his way back up, can he be a late bloomer if he does the right things to learn some of the things he's not good at? Or maybe he's just not accurate, right? If you're not accurate and you can't complete 50% of your passes, I don't care how good of a runner you are, you're not going to win.
Trevor Maddich said yesterday, if I recall correctly, that if you put Anthony Richardson in a barn, he could throw the ball through the wall. You just don't know which wall it would go through.
Right.
And yes. By the way, Anthony Richardson played 24 college games. Mm-hmm. Cam Ward played 38 at Washington State in Miami, so 38 excluding Incarnate Word. Mm-hmm. Jaden Daniels played 55 college games. Bo Nix played 61 college games.
Yeah. And, yeah, there are – with the COVID rules, you could literally play five full years. Yeah.
But again, this is why I'm not completely out on the Tennessee Titans. If this was the AFC West or any other division, I would say, you know what? They ain't got a chance in Sam Hale. They just don't.
So you think there's an opening for the Titans here, considering the quality of quarterbacks in
this
division?
Yes, just look at each quarter. The most sound quarterback you have is C.J. Stroud.
Stroud is on another stratosphere compared to the other AFC
exactly.
quarterbacks.
But he may be dealing with the problem that he has no control over, really, unless you take coach for his word and say, you know, sacks are quarterback, you know, stat. If you believe that, then okay. But outside of that, his offensive line isn't good, or it wasn't good last year. They're hoping it's better this year.
Well, they lost Laremy Tunsil. They got rid of Shaq Mason, if mm-hmm. I recall correctly. So it was bad last year.
They still have Cam. Who was the other tackle? I forgot Cam.
I'll have to look.
Yeah,
it
but
up.
Anyway, they are in a position, and this is why I am going to say until probably halfway in the season or how the Titans come out during the season. Because of each team has their own question mark at the quarterback position. Now, Houston's question mark isn't that he can't play. It's, man, the people around him, can we protect him?
Right.
Can we keep him upright? Right. If not, he's going to end up getting injured. That's their problem. Jacksonville has a problem because they don't know who Trevor Lawrence is completely.
I feel like it's put up or shut up time for Trevor.
And then for
that's what I wanted to get your thoughts on, because you didn't get a chance to do that. Can Lawrence still get there? Or is he who he is right now, a tier three guy?
Trevor Lawrence is.
Because I've always just assumed max, he'll figure out he's going to get there and have that big year.
His max is, to me, and this is, it's bad because he was the first pick in the draft. His max is Kirk Cousins. I love Kirk Cousins. But that's probably what you can expect to get out of him, Kirk Cousins type play, if he does get to that point. Because
so
right
that's
now,
like solid tier two?
Yeah, solid. At times, a solid tier two, but more than likely, he's really a three.
A high three,
yes. That's Trevor Lawrence, unless he shows something under Liam Cohen. Because you got to understand, he's always had the talent in Jacksonville. Jacksonville has not been devoid of talent. That's one thing they have not been. They had too many first-round picks, number one picks to be that, or top 10 picks. And even with all of that talent, either he couldn't stay healthy or he couldn't produce when he needed to. He had one great game. It was a bad game at first. But then he came back because the Chargers, I don't know what they were doing. But he ended up throwing four interceptions in the first half and then come back throwing four touchdowns in the first half. They end up winning. Second half, they end up winning that game in the playoffs. Outside of that, I don't think Trevor Lawrence has ever at any point reached the expectations that we all, everybody, had for him. That's why I said, he's Kirk Cousins. And there's nothing wrong with that. But he hasn't even reached Kirk Cousins' best yet. And that's what Jacksonville is waiting on. And don't be surprised. If he doesn't get it done this year, best believe they will bring in competition for him next year.
615-737-1025. Is there an opening for the Titans? Based on the quarterback tiers of the AFC South, C.J. Stroud is in the top 10. Trevor Lawrence is in the top 20. Anthony Richardson is down near the bottom. Is there an opening for Cam Ward and the Titans to take advantage? We will ask Jonathan Hutton that question coming up next. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow will join us. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.